you've had children?
When the children were small, we, we were, for some time we still had to take care of, my sister died and he was still alive in California, and for some time we had to take care of him. Yeah, we couldn't think of having more children, more than the two children. So there were some abortions until the a number of years till the children got a little bigger. They, as a matter of fact, that's the time I was, those the children I was, I just got pregnant in the picture that you still could show you.
How many, do you remember how many abortions you had?
No.
Weren't that numerous? I mean,
yeah,
more than three?
Oh, yes, more than three.
How old were you when you did decide to have a child?
My first son was born when I was 22.
So, did you, could you tell me how you went about having an abortion? Was it hard for you to find one?
Of course it was hard. There was, I lived in Philadelphia. In New York, there was a Dr. Caspi, he's dead now, so it doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. And he, to all the people that could not afford, he made abortions. And he did it in a house. My friend was helping him being his nurse, and he charged me $10.
Was that a lot for them, or was that cheap?
That was very cheap. You couldn't get it done, and he did it only for, well, there were two children in the background, and that's why he did it. He had people like that, and otherwise, well, I don't remember anymore, but it was not easy, mm-hmm. and it was without anesthetic. It was a horrible thing to live through. But that was life. That was part of life. And so that's.
Did you feel any kind of feelings about doing it? I mean, it wasn't accepted as much.
Well, my second son, my husband was always left it to me. Mm-hmm. He was very considerate. I'd feel very sick when I'd get pregnant, and. He would just take over the cooking, the things, and he was a very exceptional person. He didn't look it. People would never believe that he was such a gentle person, because he was a hard laborer. He was he had a fine mind, and he was a hard worker, never with his clean toenails. When I got pregnant with my second son, he said, well, he would help me all he can if I want to let it go, but it's up to me. Mm-hmm. And I guess I really didn't want to do it anyway. I went to New York to a friend. He's also dead now. Well, he put me in the hospital to do it. And it came to do it. I just didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So I have two beautiful sons. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad. Margaret Sanger was giving out some advice, but most of the most pregnancy came because there was no didn't use any protection at all, withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And this was this is how accidents were happening. Mm-hmm. It was not as popular as it is now. Remember that Margaret Sanger and Emma Goldman were often in jail, mm-hmm. for those things.
Did you ever go to the clinics?
No. No, there was no such a possibility. I was very busy. Two babies on my hands. Hmm. I was to lectures, to Emma Goldman's lectures, before I had the babies on my hands. But I had two babies. It was not possible.
When were the period that you were hearing Emma Goldman's speeches
all through my all through the time, because she was in New York and so was I. Always I was in close contact. As a matter of fact, the last time and Emma Goldman was already in Canada. And I was in East Elk, New Jersey, in the Ferrer Colony. I had a personal letter from her to come to a meeting. I got letters to come to the meeting to make the 5 o'clock train. And my husband came in from the Sunrise Farm. He went first there and got put in some water and heat in the houses before I came out. And they came with a couple of men, and instead of making the train, started to make dinner for them, and I missed the train. But her letter, Dr. Avridge, do you know Paul Avridge is writing? He writes the history, the anarchist history, and the Ferrer Colony, the Selden School, the principal Alexis Fern died at 101 years and 4 months, and so the Rutgers University gave a school assigned a special room for the history at the Stelton School in memory of Uncle Fern. So I just took all together all the material that I had, and there's a letter from Emma Goldman, a letter from Rudolf Rocker, and with Rudolf Rocker we were very intimately connected.
Do you still have all these things?
I have some copies. I also have here a pamphlet of Emma Goldman that I asked him to send me a copy of it, and he did. It's under this pamphlet there. Emma Goldman and Alexander Bergman, I was in that time. So it was, I was a very shy little girl, always was. But I was through all these things. And
when you heard Emma Goldman speak, did you hear her speak about her lectures on the emancipation of women?
Oh, sure, sure.
Was she terribly influential for
women? Yeah, she was influential in the, mm-hmm. That's why she was always in jail. Mm-hmm. When she was talking just from that point of view, and I found myself a working mother, mm-hmm. a working family, cannot feed their children, and it's a crime for them to be able to keep on having children. And they were, of course, it was against the law to give information, and she was giving information.
No, I know about mm-hmm. what I meant was for you personally, in terms of as a woman in the anarchist movement, did you?
Well, this it was no question of a woman's, because women and men were just on the same level
in the anarchist movement.
Yes, that's why I say. I liberated myself so many years ago that I can't be a part of the Women's League. I'm just a liberated person, that's all. As a matter of fact, I was confronted with one of the leaders in the Norman Thomas group, which I work with them closely because they are democratic. I think Sherna spoke there. That's how we met. Mm-hmm. She spoke there. And I like this group. They work for the farm workers, and I work for the farm workers. But anyway, there's been in the discussions, I'm not a Marxist. Mm-hmm. And so we freely discuss these things, and that's why I like the group. You can be yourself and express your ideas. But I like to work with them. It's a good group.
Let's go back to you.
So this woman that gave a lecture about the women's lead, and this was the way she talked. She says, the woman works in the house, the man works in the check has to be divided between the two. Mm-hmm. And then they started a very foolish discussion, and how about the exploiting of the children. So I said, I don't know what you're talking about. A working family, a working man's family has enough trouble of being able to pay the rent and the food and the clothes. Well, when they do the divided check.
When you were listening to Emma Goldman and she was talking about this, and you feel that there was a tremendous amount of merging of the men and women in the anarchist. was married?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was no such a thing as a separate standard for, it's just a match.
Tell me about it, I'm interested.
I don't know, it's so simple. But you don't need many words. It's such a natural that a man and a woman are both people, mm-hmm. and that have equal rights to be with each other. And it's especially a man and woman that love each other. They certainly don't have any such a thing. It's unnatural and abnormal that there should be such a thing.
Did you find there was more equality, so to speak, between the men and women in the anarchist movement
yes.
and the other contemporary movements?
Well, other movements, from my early years, I did not join. For instance, I listened to lectures, I listened to speeches, but I didn't join the movement. But in generally, any people that were taking on any ideas, socialists or anarchists, the division, before the Russian Revolution, there was not so much of a division between the socialists and the anarchists. Mm-hmm. Because, you see, it was difficult. They had a common enemy to fight and to meet. And there wasn't, this atmosphere was a completely freedom for all. There was not separated the men from the women. Because neither the men nor the women had a hell of a lot of liberty of any kind. And this is just a movement now. Because women have, to a great extent, achieved separate jobs, and they began and the men have more. It's a different era. There's the injustices are the same, but the opportunities are different from what they were at that time.
I'm interested, when you were working in the anarchist movement and you were organizing, were you among the leaders of organizing?
I'm always in you today. I'm just a natural, but not one that runs in the front. Mm-hmm. My husband was definitely an organizer. Mm-hmm. Now, especially the years when I was, to me, the children came in. I've seen so much of the radicals that had children whose children were laying around suffering smoky rooms, and a child sleeping on the steps almost instead of in a bed. And my children came from the parents' side of TV. And they were a picture of health because I kept them that. So that in itself was an idealistic thing to do. I just see that. And I tell that not only ever since I can remember. I raised the first baby. I mothered the first baby since I was 6 years old. And a neighbor's baby died at 9 months old, and I was 8 years old. I suffered more than the mother. I'm just a natural. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, to a picnic, I would take my children just in the open. But to a smoky hall, I wouldn't. And I would go home and put the children to sleep. Well, he was the organizer, and he was there. And there was no resentment, there was no such thing. We were glad we could buy enough milk for the children, enough food for the children. And at that time, my husband did not belong to the union. He was a marvelous electrician, but he never earned enough. That we should, first, after we clothed and fed the children, then what was left we used. Who could think of babysitters or things like that, or I want to be an equal or something. I felt I was an equal all the time.
What I'd like to do is follow what you did through the 20s and 30s as the anarchist movement evolved itself, and then maybe the next time we talk, we'll go back and talk about this.
All right, let me see now, the 20s and the 30s.
Or up through today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a large movement, for instance, before I took the children home. We had a vegetarian cooperative restaurant on 103rd Street, and we were all anarchists. Mm-hmm. That's what it seemed, because at that time there wasn't any divisions yet between the anarchists and the so-called communists. You didn't know who was who.
Wait, at this time you were taking care of the children and organizing, but you weren't working.
When I had the children with me at home, mm-hmm. I was not working. Mm-hmm. When the children were being taken care of outside of me, than I was working. But when I was working, I was a very young child, mm-hmm. and other than to participate in all these things, I was not an organizer. Mm-hmm. I was just growing up in there and participating. But it is very it was great things were done in that particular time. You know, you only know it in perspective, how important it was. For instance, a meeting, you come to an anarchist meeting now, how many people do you see there? But that time there were only thousands.
What were you in with the anarchists like in the 20s? Were you involved in labor unions?
No. Let's see now. I was involved in as much that I worked in the shop, but not in capacity. That was the time that they were organizing unions. Where did I, a little girl, come to organizing unions? But I was part of the, when the shop was taken down, I was with it.
Well, you were a young woman now in the 20s. You weren't as young as you were during the war.
Well, I was a young woman with two children. And my husband brought everything into the house.
Did he remain active?
Oh yes, he was active in the anarchist movement, he was active in the cooperative movement. He was a great organizer and a great power. Now I have a collection of letters. I never had a chance to get it written up. Collection of letters that I got to what he meant as a layperson in the cooperative movement. He was a leader without taking a job in it, you know, as an organizer. That's what they mean by a lay person. And I have it from Jerry Voorhees. As a matter of fact, Jerry Voorhees has a great deal about my own work, because in this time, I organized a cooperative theater workshop in here. And from the very beginning, we had the black and white question and the labor question, everything that came up there from the artistic point of view. And I don't know, whatever I do, if it's music I want, I don't have anything except when I organize it. I seldom find anything. Oh, I sang with the city bureau. That I didn't have to organize. I came, it was an organized thing. But otherwise, I always had to organize.
What organizing did you do during the Depression?
During the Depression, we went to the Sunrise Farm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that I did there. Of course, in the field, I was an expert compared to the city workers, because living in Stelton, New Jersey, in the Ferrer Colony, we lived around the school, and at the time of the Depression, when everybody else was living on relief, I was living off my garden. I had a big garden. And my husband always used to say, because he was earning big money as an electrician, I work day and night, what do I have? So much time, so much work. But when the Depression came, when we were eating winter and summer from my garden, because I had almost an acre of land, and all worked by hand, and we had all the food. And of course we organized their cooperatives and the school and a lot of the community work. But this was an anarchist colony. But not everybody was an anarchist. Mm-hmm. And you know, in every movement there are doers and non-doers. And we were the doers, but never on the expense of the children. The children were always taken care of, regardless of whatever there was. But of course, in the colony, it was easier, because if you put out your kerosene lamp, there was no possibility for a fire. And when I had small babies, the older children were big enough to be there too, so you didn't leave a lone child. And then the school was so situated, if you went outside and you heard the child crying, whether you were the mother or not, you went out to take care of the child. So this was no problem at all, and I was active in all the activities in the school. We had a lot of things to do. We had the Kropotkin Library we built there, the anarchist movement. We had lectures. We kept the Hippolyte Haro. You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a forward in this book. So there was a lot of work there, and we were taking care of, for instance, the striking miners, the weaving the strikers. We took the children, in, and we housed them and fed them, and a lot of things that we did in the colony. But our house was a center of activity, because Jovo, my husband, was a great organizer and a very capable man. So there was never a dull moment in our life. While we took care of children, also from an idealistic point of view, I worked very close with the firms. I learned a great deal from the firms. It's given me a great deal of life now, because I'm always on the education committees. In the United Civil Rights Committee, I was on the Education Committee. And in the Community Relations Conference now, I'm on the Education Committee. But the big educators are there, and everybody has to introduce themselves and they say who they are. I said, I'm just a lay person interested in education. I don't have a formal education even. A different kind of an education. And
you continued to self-educate yourself, didn't you? I mean, after you were here and you were working.
Well, no, sure, always. Mm-hmm. When I had my children, two little girls, I lived in Philadelphia, and spent the whole day with them in the park. I took there was a comrade, Abe Grossner, in the Philadelphia in the Radical Library, and he was a teacher. I went to him for every Sunday. I took my two children. My husband was in the Soyuz Ruska Rabotcha, and I took the two children, went for a lesson, and they played with his baby while I took an English lesson. And the whole week at the park, I was studying English.
When did you learn to speak English?
When I came to New York, I started in the first grade school, and I went through six grades in that 1 year. And first one sister got sick, I went to take care of that sister. Then the other sister got sick, I went to take care of the other, and that's at the end of my schooling. I went to work, but from the shop, I used to go in tonight to Professor Durand's lecture on Cooper Union, and I stayed there and wrote down all the words that I was hearing, and the Russian English dictionary. Looked up in the dictionary and studied the words. That was my education in New York. In Philadelphia, while I was sitting in the park with the children, I was studying the lessons that I had with Abe Grossner. And here it's not different. I have my oldest granddaughter, my younger daughter's daughter. My daughter came home with a baby when she was 10 months old. And she had to get rid of her husband. So I became, again, a mother raising the child. When she got through with high school, she didn't know what she wants to do. She didn't think she wants to go to school. So one day, my daughter and I went into City College to see what opportunities is. And they said it's the last day for registering. So she was a high school graduate, took out an application for her. And I asked if I could have an application. I thought, well, I'll see what happened. I was already driving a car, so from here it's close if you have a car. So we both registered. And when they called us for tests, she says, Bobby, I don't think I'll go to school, but could I go with you to the test? I said, sure. We both took the tests. And I was delighted that I could pass a test for City College. I have no formal education. So I went to City College. And she didn't. She went to work. But I'm learning it. I'm always learning. I'm always writing down words. I'm always I'm learning. What is education? Education is never stops. It would be easier if I had some formal education. It would be easier for me. I wouldn't have such a pile of work in my papers.
Well, When you were organizing in the 30s, where were you living then?
In 1929, we went to the Sunrise Farm.
Mm-hmm. And were there, like, a lot of connections between the cities of the different anarchist groups?
Well, there was an anarchist federation, the so-called anarchist federation. We worked here in Los Angeles. I worked for the Italian Congress. My husband and I were very much involved with helping the anarchists that suffered from the war. So, of course, from Rocca, we had all the addresses from Germany. And from Bernera, we had all the addresses from Italy. And there was a Spanish group here and an Italian group here. Mm-hmm. And the Jewish and the Italian and the Spanish people never worked together. But I worked with everybody. And till this day, they all worked with me. Because mm-hmm. now we're not, either of us are doing anything for them. I try to do something for the public affairs movement. But there is not very much except sending a contribution that you can do. But I always work with all the factions. That's one thing I can't understand, why anarchists should be so nationally wrapped up in their own way of doing. The Italians don't approve of the Jews don't approve of the Italians, and so on and so forth. And to me, this is something that, but they all have respect for me. And they all helped. We were sending packages. We were the heart of the activity of sending the packages. And at one time, when people began to quarrel, we did it ourselves on our porch here. And I got the care to send clothes to me. And I would get packages of clothes. Dora Kaiser of Los Angeles, California, and the mailman used to bring it to me. We have such things going on. No, we were very much in it wherever we were. Philadelphia, before we went to move to the Ferrer Colony, we moved to the Ferrer Colony when it was time for our children, girls to go to school, when they were 5, 6 years old. And when it was time for them to go to work or higher education or something, they moved to the Sunrise Farm. And each one is a great experience by itself.